the love that dare not speak its name, was a line of poetry written by Lord Alfred Douglas that was used in the court case against Oscar Wilde.
It's not really accurate to apply today's meaning of the word gay to people who lived in times when the understanding of homosexuality was so different.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A Belfast baker's cake case mirrors a top U.S. court controversy, Trump's new faith initiative preys on queer rights, and Oscar and Bozy meet Alexander and Dusty. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Frances O'Brien.
And I'm Seth Eric Cutler.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending May 5th, 2018. The Supreme Court of the United Kingdom, sitting in Northern Ireland this week, heard arguments in a case that's similar to one now being considered by the U.S. Supreme Court. Both involve appeals of lower court rulings rejecting a bakery owner's religious liberty to refuse to make a cake with a pro-queer message on it. In the UK case that began in 2014, evangelical Christian owners Daniel and Amy MacArthur of Belfast's Asher's Bakery refused to put icing on a cake ordered by gay activist Garth Lee that said, "Support gay marriage." Their lawyer, David Schofield, told the High Court that the McCarthys were confronted with choosing between operating their businesses or living and acting in accordance with their religious beliefs, and we say that cannot be the law. Lee's attorney countered that no abusive intent was involved in placing the order. Lady Hale, the president of the Supreme Court, told the BBC that a decision would not be announced anytime soon. These cases are by definition complex and difficult. A ruling is expected later this year or in early 2019. The U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments in December 2017 in a case involving a Colorado baker who cited his religious liberty rights in refusing to make a wedding cake once he knew his customers were a gay male couple. America's High Court is expected to issue its ruling sometime next month.
U.S. President Donald Trump used the National Day of Prayer on May 3rd to sign an executive order that critics charge is a license to discriminate against LGBTQ people based on religious belief. According to a White House press release, the establishment of a White House Faith and Opportunity Initiative aims to ensure that the faith-based and community organizations that form the bedrock of our society have strong advocates in the White House and throughout the federal government. It allows the administration to weigh in on policies involving faith-based organizations and also requires that the administration be notified of any failures to comply with religious liberty protections under law. A Trump spokesperson told The Washington Post that the executive order is less concerned about where the church-state barriers are and is focused more on effective programs without all of these arbitrary concerns as to what is appropriate.
Queer advocacy groups say they'll challenge any implementation of the executive order in court. "Freedom of religion is absolutely a core value of our nation," a Lambda legal tweet said. "What we're concerned about is the weaponization of that right. Weaponization that allows for and encourages discrimination and harm," it said. "Religious freedom is not freedom to discriminate." One wonders if these continuing attempts by the Trump administration to erode LGBTQ rights in the name of religious liberty are not the specific handiwork of Vice President Mike Pence, a self-avowed Christian, conservative, Republican, in that order.
Lawmakers in the U.S. states of Kansas and Oklahoma each approved bills within one day of each other this week to allow adoption or fostering agencies to reject same-gender couples based on the agency management's sincerely held religious beliefs. The Republican-dominated Kansas legislature sent the bill to Republican Governor Jeff Collier, who has already said he'll sign it. The Oklahoma bill even allows publicly funded agencies to discriminate against queer couples. It's unclear as we record this newscast if GOP Governor Mary Fallon will sign her state's bill into law. Opponents argued that the legislation in each state is so sweeping that it could allow adoption or fostering agencies to reject applications from interracial heterosexual couples or from couples who don't adhere to specific religious faith.
But the Republican-controlled New Hampshire state legislature passed a bill this week to protect transgender people from discrimination. Republican Governor Chris Sununu is expected to sign it into law. The bill updates the state's anti-discrimination laws covering employment, housing, and public accommodations to specifically protect transgender people. With progress at the federal level, under the Trump administration virtually impossible, activists have been advancing progressive legislation at the state level. Lawmakers in Maryland and Hawaii recently banned so-called conversion therapy for minors. In late April, Massachusetts joined California to offer an LGBTQ-inclusive curriculum in public schools. Illinois may soon follow.
In other news, a letter from nearly half of the U.S. Senate was delivered to Defense Secretary James Mattis this week, criticizing the administration's approach to military service by qualified transgender enlistees and its disregard for established research certifying the worthiness of their service. It equated Trump's approach to trans service to the now-defunct Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy that at one time banned openly lesbi-gay service members. The letter specifically slammed a memo sent by Mattis to the president in February, in which the defense secretary claimed that opening service to out-trans people posed substantial risks and an unreasonable burden on the military. New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, a Democrat, recruited 49 senators to sign on to the letter, one Republican, Alaska's Lisa Murkowski, and every Democrat except West Virginia's Joe Manchin. Just as our mistaken policy regarding lesbian, gay, and bisexual service members harmed readiness and ultimately was repealed, the implementation of your recommendations will also harm our nation's military, the letter charged. The military should establish a policy which includes all Americans who are willing to serve, and a policy that reasonably protects the military's interest as an employer in providing necessary medical care for those willing to serve our country.
Meanwhile, the Think Progress website reported this week that the Trump administration intended to stick with the president's plan to ban transgender troops, regardless of what a panel of experts recommended. The site's review of documents released through the discovery process in lawsuits against the ban finds a massive disconnect between what was discussed in the meetings of the panel and what was ultimately recommended, the site charges, reinforcing concerns that the process was rigged from the beginning in favor of a ban. Several federal courts have temporarily stopped the ban from being implemented while its constitutionality is being challenged.
Updating two stories we've been following, Hong Kong's highest court this week rejected efforts by some of the world's biggest financial institutions and law firms, along with Amnesty International, to intervene on behalf of a lesbian plaintiff seeking a spousal visa for her British wife. The couple married in England in 2011. The government is appealing a lower court ruling that said the British spouse was entitled to the visa. The rejection by the Court of Final Appeal to the support being offered by the financial and legal institutions is seen as a significant blow to the couple's case. A spokesperson for the coalition of banks and law firms told the South China Morning Post that Hong Kong faces strong competition from other international financial cities in the region and globally, and the current immigration policy risks putting Hong Kong behind other jurisdictions.
But Chile's recently inaugurated president, Sebastián Piñera, who is said to be no fan of equality, has conceded through a spokesperson that his country must comply with the January ruling of the Inter-American Court of Human Rights that requires all countries in the region without marriage equality to open the institution to gay and lesbian couples. Cecilia Perez confirmed this week in a meeting with the country's leading queer advocacy group, the Movement for Homosexual Integration and Liberation, that the Piñera administration will follow the conclusions issued last month by the Comptroller General, who said that compliance was mandatory.
And finally, the political buttons on the vest of the U.S. Teacher of the Year spoke volumes, even though the honoree gave no acceptance speech. In a ceremony on May 2nd, President Donald Trump presented the Crystal Apple Trophy to Mandy Manning, who teaches English to newly arrived immigrant and refugee children at Joel E. Ferris High School in Spokane, Washington. Trump either didn't see or didn't want to see the numerous campaign buttons she was wearing and said nothing about them. One was in support of the Peace Corps, which Trump has threatened to shut down, and the National Endowment for the Arts, another Trump target. She also prominently displayed another button in support of the Women's March that took place soon after Trump's inauguration, and one calling for trans equality now. Manning also handed the president a stack of letters written by her teenage refugee pupils detailing their experiences of arriving in the U.S. and what it meant to them. Given Trump's well-known aversion to reading, however, it's doubtful that they'll ever see the light of day in the Oval Office.
That's NewsWrap, Global Queer News with Attitude, for the week ending May 5th, 2018, written by Greg Gordon, produced with Brian DeShazer, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at the newly renovated thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Seth Eric Cutler.
And I'm Frances O'Brien.
She claims she learned her makeup techniques from female impersonators.
You've got until the end of the show to guess who that was about. But first, the Rainbow Minute guys share a letter to Bosie, and Janet Mason sees Oscar's ghost.
Oscar Wilde's letter to Bosie, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Lost for 50 years, some letters and manuscripts by Oscar Wilde were rediscovered in 2008. Now housed at the Morgan Library in New York, they detail the life and writings of Wilde during the 1890s while living in England. Among the volume is the earliest surviving letter from Wilde to his beloved Lord Alfred Douglas, whom he called Bosie. Written around 1892 on stationery of the Albemarle Club, the letter speaks of their relationship. Wilde wrote, "Dearest Bosie, I am so glad you are better. Oxford is quite uncomfortable in winter. I go to Paris next, or in the next 10 days or so. I should awfully like to go away with you somewhere where it is hot. I am terribly busy in town. Of the poem I will write tomorrow, Oscar." The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Mike Rutz.
This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out. History is a messy business. After all, it does involve human beings. I have not thought of this until now, specifically when I read the 2017 biography titled Oscar's Ghost, The Battle for Oscar Wilde's Legacy by Laura Lee, published by Emberley Publishing in England. The book covers some new territory. It portrays a struggle for literary control over Wilde's estate. But the first 150 pages or so were about the events of Wilde's life. Events that led up to the struggle over his writing by the two men in his life. This was fortunate for me because, in full disclosure, I had not read any of the previous biographies about Wilde. Here is a short version. Wilde was born in 1854 in Dublin, Ireland, went to college in England, married a woman as custom dictated, became a well-known writer, discovered he was gay, fell hopelessly in love with a younger man named Lord Alfred Douglas, and went to jail for that love in 1895. He was then released from jail in 1897 and in 1900 died penniless. It was interesting to read that the well-known line, "The love that dare not speak its name," was a line of poetry written by Lord Alfred Douglas that was used in the court case against Oscar Wilde. It was as equally fascinating to read that when Oscar spoke of his devotion to Lord Alfred Douglas, nicknamed Bosie, in the courtroom, that the attendees of the trial applauded. This is proof that people, at least some of them, are always more enlightened than the laws that govern them. Oscar was found guilty and went to jail. In prison, he wrote that what is arguably his best work, titled De Profundis, Latin for From the Depths, a letter to Lord Alfred Douglas. We have this work because Oscar handed it to his good friend and literary executor, Robert Ross, who was also his occasional lover. The long essay did not portray Lord Alfred Douglas in a good light. After all, Douglas was the reason that Oscar had gone to jail and lost everything. Nevertheless, after Oscar's release from jail, the two men reunited and for a short time lived in Naples. After Oscar died an untimely death from a rare disease, Lord Alfred Douglas learned of the existence of De Profundis and that it was written as a letter to him. Because of this, he considered it his personal property and went into a litigious rage. The two men knew of Oscar's involvement with each of them, and for a while they were good friends. The enmity that grew between them after Oscar's death was unfortunate. But we do have Robert Ross to thank for establishing Oscar Wilde's legacy. In the conclusion, the author notes how fast things have changed. In March 2014, same-sex marriage became legal in the UK. A little more than a year later, it became the law of Oscar Wilde's native land. In January 2017, Wilde was posthumously pardoned, along with 50,000 other gay men who had been convicted under a law that no longer exists. It can only be hoped that we are finally entering an era when men who love men can, indeed, be dead to all sense of shame. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
I'm Stephen Fry. The great Oscar Wilde once said, "The only sin is stupidity." That is why it is imperative that we stay as informed as possible. An excellent way to do this is to listen to This Way Out, the international radio program for all our sexually diverse communities.
Yeah, we go way, 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 way back. We love, love, love like that.
Way, 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 way back.
Outcasting Overtime's Wayback Machine takes a young ally on a trip to find the gay beginning for a happy ending.
This is Outcasting Overtime, a special feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Hi, I'm Sam, a youth participant in Outcasting's main studio in Westchester County, New York. On this edition, Outcaster Lucas talks about the transition in society from viewing homosexuality as a disease to an identity.
While you scroll through Facebook, you may stumble upon an article claiming that George Washington or Alexander the Great was gay. While we don't have knowledge to say whether these claims are true or not, we can say that at the times that these individuals were alive, nobody would truly identify as gay, even if they did have sexual relations with other people of the same sex. Being gay, as it is today, has grown to be understood as an identity relatively recently. Historically, LGBTQ people have hidden what were considered contrary sexual feelings. But being able to express these emotions and urges differs greatly from being able to identify as gay or LGBTQ. We probably can't say that these people were gay in today's definition of the word, but they may have had such sexual feelings. These new labels may form a better picture of what it means to be homosexual, but also changes the meaning of heterosexual. Originally, the definitions of homosexuality and even heterosexuality were obscure medical terms that described what were considered abnormal sex drives. In 1909, homosexuality was defined as a morbid sexual passion for one of the same sex. During the years leading up to 1973, there was a movement in the mental health community to depathologize homosexuality, and in 1987, all aspects of homosexuality were removed from the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, or DSM, a manual that is used to identify mental illnesses. Today, it is archaic to call homosexuality a mental illness, a tic or a phase, as it was considered in the first official medical document on this topic, titled Contrary Sexual Feeling. However, in the past, having sexual feelings was simply a phase in a feeling, not a decisive factor in who someone was. Being gay is now better understood as an identity, a way of being, rather than a problem or a short-term urge. Historically, strict gender roles were also defined by the creation of duties and jobs specific to each gender. This was based on the importance of procreation and further strengthened the idea of homosexuality as a problem, not only as people being strange, but as endangering the future of a community, seeing that gay people couldn't procreate with each other. This started to change in the post-World War II era, when Alfred Kinsey, a now famous sexual behaviorist, came along and, based on extensive primary research, introduced the idea of sexuality as a continuum. This challenged the idea of sexuality as a binary. Until then, you were either straight or gay. Kinsey introduced a scale to describe people's sexual tendencies, with 0 being completely straight and 6 being completely homosexual, and 1 through 5 being at various points in between. This understanding of sexuality fell in line more with a more sophisticated idea of human identity. The continuum also established the idea that sexuality was more of an emotional aspect of a person. After many years of fighting, increasing liberal and modern thought resulted in homosexuality being removed from the DSM. These new definitions allow people to reconsider sexual desires and experiences as legitimate when they may not have been open-minded earlier. They can potentially understand their desires as a characteristic of their identity and not as a problem to be solved. As a straight guy living in the 21st century, I understand that in the future, if I do have feelings for another guy, I can consider it as a healthy and legitimate emotional connection and not as a medical problem or phase. The word gay, as a more common, less medical term for homosexual, became established in the 1960s. People like George Washington may have had homosexual tendencies, and if they lived today, they might have been considered gay and might have considered themselves to be gay. But it's not really accurate to apply today's meaning of the word gay to people who lived in times when the understanding of homosexuality was so different.
Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime, a special feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Outcasting Overtime is a production of Media for the Public Good, a nonprofit organization. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about Outcasting. Watch Outcasting videos, access our social media links, and listen to the show. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
Her biggest hits in the 1960s didn't address what her cover did of a woman's music anthem from the 1970s by lesbian feminist singer-songwriter Margie Adam, as you'll hear now in another Rainbow Minute.
Dusty Springfield's Beautiful Soul, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. A camp icon of glamorous excess, with her towering beehive hairdo and heavy black mascara, Dusty Springfield is acclaimed as one of the greatest popular music voices ever. Also an icon to gay and lesbian culture, she claims she learned her makeup techniques from female impersonators. On an album shelved for years was a track called Beautiful Soul, in which Springfield sang of love for a woman. It was the first and only time the self-professed bisexual dared to do so. Today, the song is often heard at lesbian weddings and commitment ceremonies worldwide. Just before her death, in 1999, Springfield was awarded the Order of the British Empire by Queen Elizabeth II. Her song, Beautiful Soul, was released sometime after her death. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Herschel Stratego. I wonder.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Program material this week came from Francis O'Brien and Seth Eric Cutler, with thanks to Brian DeShazer from Outcasters, Sam and Lucas, produced by Mark Salfos, Mike Rutz and Herschel Spertigio, produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, and from Janet Mason. Olivia Holt and Dusty Springfield performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our individual listener donors who make this program possible. 30th anniversary greetings are still gratefully being accepted at the all-new thiswayout.org. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Plus. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on Tasman FM, Nubina, Tasmania, BCFM, Bristol, England, WPSU, University Park, Pennsylvania, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.